back, ladies and gentlemen. Brandon Straka is my guest. Follow him on X at Brandon Straka. Find the debate that myself, Owen Schroyer, and Alex Stein participated in on YouTube, the Walk Away Campaign. And you can search MAGA, the Great MAGA Divide, Baby Boomers versus Millennials. And I got to admit, I may have been wrong. I was pitching this in the last segment saying, if you want to see a really good conversation, I'm not sure there was a clear and away winner. Well, I just scrolled through the comments on YouTube. Turns out there was a clear and away winner. Turns out we won. Turns out the Millennials blew the Boomers out of the water, according to people on YouTube. So maybe we did do better than I expected. And yeah, people really enjoyed. I like, I don't need to read some of these comments, but we got cut off there at the very end. I wanted you to let you finish your thought and tell everybody what's coming up next and how they can support Walk Away.
Yeah, thank you. Basically what I was going to say was, look, we're kind of putting ourselves out there by creating this content and going down this road. And I'm a big believer in that, the truth matters. And you can't really deal with the problems in any movement unless you can truthfully identify what the problems are and bring them to the table and try to handle it. And as I said earlier, a lot of the support that I've had for 8 years to drive Walk Away forward has been people in the older generation. A lot of my larger donors are very adherent to Israel. And that's fine. I have a total respect for that. But my point is, we're kind of going out on a limb here and we are losing support by doing it. So if there are people out there who think that this message is necessary and think that these types of conversations are necessary, please go to our YouTube channel, subscribe, share our content, follow it. The sad news is we're going to continue to lose a lot of followers and a lot of support by creating the content, but I'm willing to do it because I think the content is really important and necessary. And if anybody wants to help support what we're doing, they can go to walkawaycampaign.com, make a donation to the cause so we can continue to produce these debates, these conversations. That help would be tremendous. And I would ask for the same thing on my X account too, at Brandon Straka. I mean, I'm losing like thousands of followers a day because I'm being outspoken about things that, a lot of people who are just staunchly behind Trump no matter what, don't want to hear this stuff. But I know that there's a huge appetite for people who are seeing the truth about what's going on. And I'd love it if you'd follow me and help support the work we're doing.
Absolutely. And I can just say from working with you behind the scenes, I can just tell you're motivated by the truth. I mean, you can tell sometimes behind the scenes, all right, this guy over here is doing stuff because he thinks it's going to be popular. This guy over here is doing it because he thinks he can get money. When I work with you, I can tell you're motivated by the truth and you're genuinely concerned about our inability to find the truth right now. And we're trying to solve that problem. And I'm not surprised that you're losing support because that's just the world that we are in. It's sad, but true. But I am a little surprised because this was a debate. I mean, you didn't rig it. You didn't give us the questions beforehand. The boomers you chose, I thought were very good, very respectable, very good. If they're upset at this, it's because their debate lost. It's because they lost the argument. That's not your fault. Like they need a better position, I guess.
Well, the sad truth is that a lot of the people who are unfollowing me right now or expressing their anger about it didn't even watch it. Didn't even watch it. So people are mad that I would create any content that could be construed as critical of Trump or the Trump administration. And basically their argument is, we're going into the midterms and he's doing the best he can and he just needs our support right now. So why would you do this? You're only making things worse, which obviously is not true at all. But it's just kind of sad because I think if people actually took the time to watch it, I mean, if you read the comments, you'll actually see a lot of people in the baby boomer generation who are saying like, wow, this is super eye opening. I'm glad I watched this. This is really important. A lot of people are saying it's the best content Walkaway's ever created.
Yep.
And I agree. Actually, I think it's really, really necessary. And I think it's very well done, if I may say so. And it's disappointing, but it's where we are.
Well, hey, you're going to get pushback for telling the truth. And unfortunately, if they'd had these conversations beforehand, Trump would be swept into a midterm success. It's because we haven't had this conversation that he's in trouble at all. Brandon Straka, incredible stuff. Walk away.
There is a war. It It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, folks. So before we did our interview with Brandon Straka, we were talking about the consequence, the backlash, the outrage over the murder of Henry Nowak in the UK. And we're going to go back to that because as we've been speaking, the protest in the UK has become violent and the police are now attacking the protesters. And so we'll show you those videos, give you an update as to what exactly is going on. And again, I ask, how is this going to be any different? What is the outcome of this going to be that's going to improve the lives of the British? Because outside of that, then, you know, what is protesting other than just a pressure release valve if it doesn't actually achieve the change that it's seeking? So we'll get into exactly what's going on there. We've got, of course, a lot of domestic news to continue to cover and the war in Iran. But, you know, right there, Brandon Straka was talking about the struggles that he's had trying to truthfully assess what's going on politically these days to try to retain and hold on to the thing that made the MAGA movement so appealing in the first place, the type of organization, the type of movement, the type of values and principles that would draw people from the left away from the left by waking them up to the reality of the positions that they support. And you would think this would actually be happening more right now because you see more and more people on the left being censored. Cenk Uygur just got denied access to the UK. And he's very angry about this, of course. But I would point out that whether it's Sasan Piker or Cenk Uygur or anybody else on the left, they were cheering for the exact same policies that are now facing them. And at the time, that's what we said. That was our argument. We were saying, you think censorship's great because you're the ones in charge. You can't set this precedent. Well, they thought we were idiots, set the precedent, and now they're paying the price for it. And I'm sort of surprised that they're not, well, I'm not actually that surprised because who they are. When you're on the left, you tend not to have this type of retrospection. But if it was me, I would be looking around and going, gee, maybe they were right about the whole we got to preserve free speech thing. Maybe when they were saying it's free speech and I was saying it's offensive and it shouldn't be free speech, maybe now I understand why they were right the whole time. Now, I don't know if they're actually going through that process. It'd be nice if they were. But it's strange. It's strange how people interpret sort of whatever they want from whatever they hear you say. Like, I've been very frustrated at Trump. I've been very outspoken and in some cases outraged, but for the most part, just bemused, just sort of sad about what has happened to the Trump movement. But at the same time, anytime he does something good, I'll celebrate him. And every time I've talked about him, and again, this isn't like a strategic thing. I'm not going, oh, I'm going to criticize Trump, but I better pad it in some, you know, compliments so, you know, I don't drive away the Trump supporters. I'm just going to say what I think. I'm going to say what I think is true. And I hope at the end of the day that even if you disagree with me, you're at least the type of person that appreciates the sincerity that I'm trying to bring to you and the honesty that I approach all this stuff with. Because if Trump was doing well, I wish he had been the person that we thought he was. I wish he had maintained campaign Trump through his administration and I'd continue to be his biggest cheerleader. And I still to this day want him to succeed. I don't want to see his family imprisoned by the radical Democrats. I don't want to see any of that crap. And yet I have people online going, well, now that you're a radical anti-Trumper. And it's like, all right, people just hear whatever they want to hear. All I can do is tell the truth and trust that you give me the benefit of the doubt, especially if you've been watching me for a long enough time that I do 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, extemporaneous, no teleprompters, nobody telling me what to say. I would think you'd be able to, I'd be able to get across to you that I'm just have very sincere concerns about the state of this country, concerns that have to be addressed. They're existential. And when something's existential like that, whether it makes Trump happy or not is not, doesn't even enter into the conversation as far as I'm concerned. And I do love and appreciate that our audience can come along with us on this journey and can, even if you love Trump and think we're off the mark here, again, I hope that you at least respect that we are approaching it from a truthful, honest, and sincere position. And we're motivated at the end of the day, as we always have been, by liberty, by the concept of liberty, even as that has fallen out of vogue, even as, libertarian, doesn't quite have the same meaning that it may have had 15 years ago. It's not quite as respected as maybe it was when Ron Paul was the face of it. And yet, I'm still a libertarian, fundamentally. I still think liberty is the ultimate value, and that's what we have to pursue. And that's our ultimate guiding light. And if you agree with that and, want to join us on this journey, I don't care what you think about Trump. I don't care what race you are. I don't care what God you pray to. As long as you agree that I have the right to my God and I have the right to speak my mind and I have the right to oppose my government, then we can mutually benefit in that arrangement. And we're on the same team. So we've also, had trouble with this, but it's not actually that hard, because the other thing is, it's like our whole thing is being sincere. Our whole thing is being uncontrolled. Our whole vibe is saying what's true, even if it destroys us. It's just like that's who we are, and we kind of can't help it, but we wouldn't want to help it anyway. And so it's like, okay, if we were to go, oh, gee, opposing Trump sure is unpopular, we better keep supporting Trump because it's popular, it's like we might as well not exist at that point. At that point, nothing we say has any credibility anymore. So we're never going to make a decision like that. We're never going to cover something because it's popular. We're never going to not cover something because it's unpopular. We're going to cover the most unpopular topics ever. We're going to take stances that are true regardless of who anybody feels about it. And we think this is a valuable service. And we think this is a good thing to have a powerful, big, important media outlet that refuses to be silent, even if their own side says it. So I hope you can support us in this mission. We cannot do it without you. We do rely on you. We do not take your support for granted. And right now is a fantastic time to go to thealexjonesstore.com, not only because you're getting massive discounts on some of our best-selling products like Methylene Red, Atomic Defense, Methylene Blue Tincture, Methylene Blue Gummies, MK Ultra, War Cry Smelling Salts, and so much more. All of those are 40% off, 35% off Zeolite Tincture, Creatine Powder, CMOS Capsules, Meth Blue Caps, and 30% off the Iodine Tincture, the CMOS Gummies, the Shilajit Caps and Gummies, and Ultimate Chill and Ultimate Energy. All of those, 30% off. But best of all, this week only, you get 2x the entries to win one of 2 incredible cars, or both, a custom H1 Hummer and a 2026 Dodge Charger souped up to the maximum degree, plus $20,000 in cash. For every $1 you spend, you get 100x the entries to win either or both of these cars. Somebody's got to win it. Might as well be you. You just got to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com. This week only, you're getting 2x the entries than you normally do, which means you're getting 100x entries for every dollar you spend. So most of the people that win these cars win in this double week. Once a month, there's a week where both sweepstakes overlap for 1 week, and almost every time we've given away a car, it's somebody who bought it during this week, this crossover week. So now's the time. Not only, it's like, talk about a 360 win. Talk about a 1080 win. You support free speech. You basically spit in the face of the globalists that thought they'd destroyed us 10 years ago and are wondering why we won't stop moving. You get a fantastic product that's going to improve your life and help you in a lot of ways. And you might just walk away with an H1 Hummer. Like, it's like win, 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 win. It's win on top of win. There's no downside. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. And with that, let's return to the utterly heartbreaking, horrifying, and deeply typical story of Henry Nowak. Young man, 18, on his way back home from a night out at 11 p.m., and he is set upon by a knife man, stabs him in the back, stabs him in the legs, and leaves him bleeding to death when the police show up, mock him, disregard what Henry Nowak said, and handcuff him as he bleeds to death, desperately trying to tell them, "I've been stabbed, I can't breathe." Again, beyond horrifying and beyond reason to rise up against your government, like actually rise up against it. Like this is the culmination of so many horrifying trajectories, trends, events that have occurred over the last several years that, ironically, I don't know if ironic is the right word, but ironically enough, so much of this got kicked off by the death in the hands of police of George Floyd. The comparisons, of course, as I made earlier, I mean, these two events are utterly different in every possible way, in that the person who died actually was innocent, was actually killed because of the racist positions of the police that they were actually trained in, and actually is the symptom of a deeply and ubiquitously racist power structure that deliberately and explicitly disadvantages certain people because of their immutable characteristics, their skin color, their race, their status of birth, things they have no control over. Now, strangely, and again, it would honestly be funny if it weren't, you know, didn't have such devastating and horrifying and deadly consequences. But like, I did not realize that they allowed people to carry knives in the UK. How many times over the last 10 years have you heard the most outrageous headlines about knife crime in the UK? Sadiq Khan saying knife crime is part and parcel with city living. Knife bins where they ask people to throw their knives away as if that's solving a problem, as if it's people going, "God, I wish I could just get rid of this giant knife. Wherever will I put it?" Okay, it's like totally absurd. Knife bins. Bin your knife there, mate. It's like, what the hell is wrong with you people? You can't have butter knives. I've seen posts where it's like you have to show your ID to literally buy cutlery, buy spoons and forks in this country. So just think about the years upon year upon year of these ridiculous headlines of this nation just desperately trying to figure out how to stop knife crime. Meanwhile, every minority has their own personal exclusion where they can carry 10-inch long, you know, punching daggers if they feel like it. It is so crazy. It's so crazy. Ethnic daggers of Britain's major ethnic groups. Now, I don't think all these are actually legal to carry, but certainly the Sikh kirpan is one of those where they're just allowed to carry it around. There's allowed to get, which I imagine, I mean, are Japanese people allowed to carry samurai swords, do you think? I wonder. How long does this tradition have to go back? Is it even real? Like, what the hell? What are you talking about? I'm telling you, it's like, they're like, no knives. So like, we're going to have knife bins. You can't have butter knives. You can't, I mean, we are cracking down on the knives. It's like, well, what about that guy? And it's just a guy covered in giant knives. And they're like, oh, he's fine. Don't worry about him. What? What? What is wrong with you people? Genuinely, what is wrong with you people? And really, what needs to happen is the British need to start carrying around knives. There's been some discussion about this. The Anglo-Saxon Seax, S-E-A-X, Seax, it's a type of knife. It was carried around by the Vikings, essentially. It was like a bowie knife, like the traditional bowie knife. Can I carry a bowie knife since I'm from Texas? If I go to the UK, can I carry around a 12-inch bowie knife with a, you know, finger guard for fighting? I am Texan, after all. It is my religion. It is my prerogative. It is my ancestral right to carry around a bowie knife. But they don't care. But obviously not. But did you know the name Saxon. Do you know what the name Saxon means? Do you know where it comes from? It comes from the word sea axe. It literally means knife. The name Saxon, as in Anglo-Saxon, means a warrior who carries a sea axe. I think they have a pretty good case for saying, you know, they have an ancestral right to a traditional knife, a traditional blade, in the exact same way that the Sikh are allowed to carry one. If you're Anglo-Saxon, your name literally means warrior who carries a knife. How far Britain has fallen. The place named after a knife now only allows psychotic foreigners to carry around giant knives. And of course, the question has become, what do you do about it? Do you get rid of the religious, you know, exclusions? That's not a knife. This is a knife. Do Australians even have knives anymore? We haven't even checked in on Australia about this. Only Jewish people can hold knives in Australia. Only Jewish people going to or from a bris are allowed to carry a knife in Australia. Nobody else. I didn't see that. I didn't see the bris knife on the ethnic dagger. Oh, they use their teeth. Never mind. They use their teeth. So the question is, do you let them keep their knives or do you not? I think, for the sake of general sanity, if you are as paranoid about knives as the UK government has been over the last several decades, go ahead and get rid of all the knives. If you're going to charge people for having butter knives outside of their home, go ahead and have that apply to the foreigners as well. I think that's reasonable. It's like some of the things we have to talk about on this show. It's so utterly nuts. Other people are saying, let the Sikhs keep their knives. Let the natives arm themselves as well. People are either equal under the law or they aren't. Spoiler alert, they aren't, as evidenced well by this. There you go. There's a Scottish girl holding her traditional sea axe and hatchet. Actually, it's kind of a sea axe shape there. But the UK Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, has said there's going to be no rollback of the right to carry ceremonial knives. Because, you know, they'll undo literally every part of UK society. They will upend 2,000 years of tradition on a whim. I mean, hell, they just got rid of the House of Lords. They're getting rid of jury trials. They are abandoning every aspect of their culture as rapidly as they can, without a second thought, without a debate, and without, you know, the ability for the regular people to have a say on it. And then there's a example like this where it's like, hey, we have this weird cutout where you're allowed to carry a knife if you're a Sikh, and they're just like, we cannot change, we can never change that. That is an ancient tradition of ours that, you know, we refuse to give up. The House of Lords, yeah, forget that. The Magna Carta, who cares? But never, never will we ever bend to the demand that Indian people can't carry giant murder blades around. Here's the actual ceremonial blade. What type of ceremonies, you're asking? I think we saw one. I think we saw one, and it ended with Henry Nowak dying. This is the 8-inch ceremonial blade used to murder Henry Nowak. British people aren't allowed to carry weapons or any means of self-defense. Meanwhile, certain groups are allowed to walk around with these. Absurd. Yeah, but also perfectly in line with everything else that we've seen. Women in the UK get arrested for pepper spray. Grown men are allowed to carry around 8-inch long knives, wearing them openly, but a young woman in the rape capital of Europe can't carry around pepper spray to defend herself. Now, we closed out on that BBC radio interview, but I think we can move on. But what she was about to show, if we have a cue where we ended, let's go ahead and pick that up again, because what she is about to talk about is Henry Nowak's father. Now, Henry Nowak's father did give a press conference, and he said a lot of things. What she plays is one part. I'll tell you what else he says, and then we'll talk about what may have motivated him to say the thing that she's about to play him saying on BBC Radio 4. So again, the person she's interviewing, you know, just talked about, you know, made all of these great points about the inconsistency of the British media when it comes to asking questions about the motivation of race when it comes to police killings, comparing it to George Floyd, talking about how the racism deliberately instilled in the UK policing system led directly to Henry Novak's death. She ignores all of these points and basically tries to shame him by playing Henry Novak's father, basically saying, don't politicize this, in a statement that is almost word for word, exactly what we've heard a million other times. So I'll tell you what I think is behind this. Here's this BBC woman trying to shut everybody up for coming to any political conclusions about the stabbing that occurred against Henry Nowak. Let's watch.
The program would agree with that.
Let's play you somebody who's obviously very close to this, Henry Nowak's father, Mark. This is what he said outside court yesterday.
We do not want his death to be used to create further division, hatred or tension. We want his story to make our streets safer for everyone.
He also went on.
As the KC for the prosecution summed up in court, this is not a case about Sikhism. This is not a case about racism. This is a case about murder.
See, it's Henry's father saying this is not a case about racism.
Well, my heart goes out to him and to the whole family. And I could not agree more that what we need is equality before the law. And what this is about, evidently, and again, this isn't just my view. I think the level of anger, quite rightly, in this country is significant as people watch this footage. And I put it to you again. I mean, even just hearing the last exchange that you just had there where, you know, he insulted Nigel Farage. Look, the reality is that when the police turned up, Henry said repeatedly that he had been stabbed and said, I cannot breathe. And yet the police went on to arrest him. What that means is the accusation from an ethnic minority about racism was taken as read with no burden of proof. Whereas the accusation of this person has stabbed me from a white man was suddenly there was a burden of proof for that.
What do you think needs to happen?
Entire discussion. And that is the exact point that we are making.
It is,
and it is a direct result of the way police are trained these days.
What do you think needs to happen?
I've seen many serving police officers, and they tell me all the time.
She's trying to interrupt, and we can go ahead and take it down now. But look, it does, to be honest with you, first of all, it doesn't really matter what the father says. He is not the arbiter of reality, right? Obviously, this had to do with race. Obviously, the Sikh man was motivated by race. Why did he stab this kid? We haven't even heard like a suggestion about that. Why did he stab the kid? Why did he claim the kid, Henry Nowak, called him a racist name? Because they know how useful it is. Why did the officers behave the way they did? Because they thought it was a racial crime that they were contending with. So, you know, it's like this, you know, okay, fine. The dad said that. He's wrong. I get that he probably has just had his world destroyed, and in this incredibly vulnerable emotional moment, he almost certainly has members of the UK government coming to him and giving him a script to read, because that's what they do. And this was one of the things that Trump actually got rid of here, but we used to have it here in America, which is why you had people like Carmelo Anthony's father say exactly the same thing, or any of these people say exactly the same thing. It's why it's sort of shocking whenever you see somebody, a father of a child murdered in a, you know, racial attack against white people, like the father who presented to Congress and, you know, was outraged and said, you know, this is awful and I hope nobody goes through this. And this is a consequence of the anti-white racism. And it's like so rare to see that, because there are offices that go and train the people as to what to say in the exact same way that they trained George Floyd's family to go out and stoke the fires. They train the family of victims to try to put those fires out. We're going to expand more on the other side. We're going to stick on this story. There's a lot more.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its businesses?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there. But there are dozens and dozens of countries that have experienced it. And of course, you have countries that going bankrupt like six or seven times. I mean, not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else. Yeah. And I've always hoped that, you know, the U.S. never does it. But we are not immune from it happening.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So the implications of that are bond market is toast, because the value of bonds, the price of bonds comes down as interest rates rise. The inverse is also true. When interest rates come down, the value of bonds goes up. So as you raise interest rates, the value of bonds comes down. Who's allocated into bonds? The bond market is way larger than the equity market, the stock market. So you've got pension funds that are allocated into bonds, right? Anybody that's on a fixed income, banks are allocated into bonds. Consider this, an insurance company. Most insurance companies across the country are allocated about 90% into the bond market with their internal portfolios. What does an insurance company do? It pays beneficiaries when people die, right? So if the asset that they have to sell to pay those beneficiaries is coming down in price, this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything, and on the banking system.
And let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed.
Yeah, because that was our get-out-of-jail-free card, right? We could print as much money as we want, and everybody around the world still needed the U.S. dollar. If you don't have reserve currency status like every other country, other than the one that has reserve currency status, when you print excessively, people no longer want your currency. Don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. So you can roll over your IRAs. You have an old 401k, roll that over. Your brokerage accounts, take delivery of it at home or store it at a depository. If you don't want to take delivery at home, we'll walk you through that, answer your questions, make sure that you feel comfortable with everything, because it's ultimately your decision. We're just here to help guide and go on this journey with you. 1,000-ounce bars of silver, 100-ounce bars, 10-ounce bars, or 1-ounce generic refinery
but
rounds.
But then you can roll gold over the financial instruments, too.
1-ounce gold bars or kilo bars, IRAs. If it has IRA in the name, simple, SEP, Roth, traditional, inherited, we can do that. Or you can do just a brokerage account that you just wire us funds, and it's a non-IRA account.
Is it wholesale? And are they buying it back with no cost? No fee. This is the place to go. And we'll get into gold and silver as well. Dr. Kirk Elliott, KEPM.com/gold. That way they know it comes from us. So it supports the broadcast. KEPM.com/gold or 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900. Call and get a free consultation. Or sign up for email. They'll call you back. They can also roll over a lot of financial instruments. This is the place to go. KEPM.com/gold. So gold and silver is the way to go. The best investment the last 2+ years. And you just check the wholesale price every day. That's what you get it for. You sell it back. For no cost, nobody else of any size does that. That's real.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Keep your hand on your gun.
Don't welcome back, folks. Anyone. The murder of Henry Nowak at the hands of a Sikh immigrant to the UK, and really at the hands of the UK police, who likely could have saved his life if they'd taken his complaint seriously, but they didn't. Why didn't they? Because they said he was racist. And that's where the claim that was just played on BBC from Henry Nowak's father comes into conflict with everything else that Henry Nowak's father said. He spoke out in front of the courthouse saying, quote, about his son, quote, he told officers he could not breathe 9 times. He said he had been stabbed 4 times, but the officers replied saying, I don't think you have, mate. Why? Why did that happen? What was the cause? What would cause a police officer to ignore these claims from a victim, a stabbing victim? Racism. That's why, because they were trained about this. They were trained to treat claims of racism as the most important thing. And this all occurred after the death of George Floyd in the UK government, despite having absolutely nothing to do with George Floyd, not having the civil rights movement, not having a history of segregation, not having a history of slavery. They don't have any of the cultural anything that was behind the George Floyd riots and protest and activist movement here in America. And yet they had exactly the same movement in the UK, because at the end of the day, it actually had nothing to do with white cops murdering black people, because that doesn't actually exist. That's not actually a trend. It's not actually a problem that America has. It's also not a problem the UK has. But Black Lives Matter, like so many other activist protest movements recently, are just motivated by general anti-white, anti-European communist hatred, and they dress it up in whatever the outrage of the day seems to be. So the people of the UK are protesting against this and are being attacked by the cops for it, of course. But the concern here is sort of ubiquitous. It's like the same thing over and over again, which is a form of insanity that, like so many other things we talk about, I really have a hard time confronting, because it's so retarded. Hans Machny on X says, the Henry Nowak judge is worried about the safety of Sikhs. The fact that he shares the same false victim oppressor conditioning as the police officers who arrested Nowak shows just how completely British institutions have been permeated by the ideology of collective white guilt. So the judge in the Henry Nowak case said, quote, your actions have stirred up racial tension. He's talking to the knife man here. Your actions have stirred up racial tension. You have brought shame upon your family and your religion, the judge adds. Your actions have stirred up racial tension in Southampton and across the country, which have made many Sikhs worried about their safety. It's a classic Norm Macdonald joke, right? Muslims could set off a dirty nuke in New York City and kill 10 million people. And then, you know, can you imagine the backlash to peaceful Muslims? A Sikh man stabs an 18-year-old white guy to death, and the judge's overriding concern is for the safety of Sikh people. Which, on one hand, makes no sense on the face of it. Obviously, I don't think I need to elaborate. The man doing the stabbing is not the one whose safety should be concerned about. Sikhs demonized after murder, community leader says. Oh, well, what? Because of the murder? What, because of the murder you've been demonized? You should talk about it to Israel, about how they take, you know, they deal with it. You know, yeah, Sikhs failed to condemn murder is what that headline should actually say. And literally the condemnations that I've seen, like from the family and from the Sikh community, are literally predicated on this also. They're like, we condemn this murder because it could have backlash to our culture. So, like, on the face of it, it's insane. Oh, a white guy got stabbed by a Sikh. Those poor Sikhs, I hope they're okay. That's crazy on the face of it, obviously. Where it really gets insane is the understanding, as far as I know, through decade upon decade of the most vicious anti-white attacks ever, millions, potentially, girls being groomed and raped, vicious stabbing attacks against little girls at dance class, bombs going off in Manchester Arena. Through all of this, I cannot think of a single instance ever where there was any violent repercussion for the culture that did it. Not one. So, like, on the face of it, it's insane to say the Sikhs stabbed a white guy, therefore the Sikhs need to be protected, those poor Sikhs. On the face of it, it's crazy. But then if you look at the history and you go, this person is concerned about something that has never happened. It's never happened. It maybe should happen. Like, maybe white people wouldn't be murdered at such a rate if, like, the Sikh people thought, gee, if I do this, you know, the white people are going to burn my neighborhood and kill my whole family. Maybe I better not mess with the white kids. Sort of used to be the strategy, you know. It used to be a zero tolerance strategy. I always think about this story of Native Americans walking through a white village, and it was two young Native American men, and one of them sees an apple sitting on a table and tells the other one, hey, go steal that apple. And the other one goes, hell no, I'm not stealing that apple from the white people. You think I'm going to steal from white people? Hell no, I'm not going to do that. I like my life. I'm not stealing an apple. So the other guy goes, you know, you're such a coward. You're so scared of these people. You won't even take an apple from them. And it actually goes back and forth and like ramps up to the point where the other guy's like, I'm so not scared. I'm going to take one of their women. And so they actually take one of the white women. And long story short, it starts a war and all of the Indians are gone now. Which I lament. I actually, you know, rue and disapprove of that part of our history. I do wish the Native Americans were around in much, much greater numbers. But the point is, it's like, where'd that attitude go? Where'd that attitude go? Because, yeah, occasionally, you know, you'd have some problems. But in general, it was like, don't even think about touching the white women. Don't even think about touching the white people. Don't take their stuff. Don't mess with their women. They will go insane and kill all of us. Now, if that was still the situation, I could understand this judge's concern. But what we've seen over the last several decades is a bunch of white people singing Don't Look Back in Anger as their daughters' bloody, disfigured bodies lie still warm on the floor. So where is this concern coming from? Like, that is an extra dimension of insanity to all of this, is that there is this persistent, continual, like, important fear. Like, it changes policies that are made. It determines what statements judges are making. And it is so utterly baseless. It really does feel to me like, and this is, you know, when you're tuned in with reality, it feels like everybody else is walking around fixated on, terrified of, designing their government system around the fear of Bigfoot, the fear of Sasquatch. And it's like, this doesn't exist. It's a thing that doesn't exist, and that the entire government system is predicated on fighting a thing that doesn't exist. The violent white supremacist backlash to immigrant violence. If it did exist, the UK wouldn't be in the situation that it's in. But this fabricated, non-existent fear and guilt over being a white person is so pervasive. Literally, when a Sikh person still kills a white person, it's the Sikhs that they're concerned about. Can you find one example? I would love to see one example. One example in the last 100 years, or maybe in 100 years. They actually had balls back then. I'll give you 50 years. 50 years. Let's go back to 1970. Can you find a single instance in which a racial minority has been subject to mob violence in the UK? One instance. Can you find one? Because I could find literally a million instances of foreigners in the UK killing, raping, stabbing, murdering, blowing up, or otherwise disadvantaging, and in some cases, literally eating white British people. There are literally stories of little girls, victims of rape gangs, who they kill and then grind into kebab meat. Okay? Like, this is what we're talking about. And these people are terrified that white people might one day potentially seek revenge. I wish, folks. But it's never going to happen. So again, I mean, these are the levels of insanity that we're trying to deal with. It's multi-layered. It's like you can be peeling back onions for eternity and you'll never get to the bottom of leftist slash brainwashed psychopathy. It's all psychotic. I'm going to show you the videos of the protests. We're getting to those, but there's so much background to this. Winston Marshall at MRWIN Marshall on X. How could an English police officer cuff and drag an innocent dying white boy who'd been stabbed 5 times, gasping for his life? Well, after George Floyd in 2020, an incident which had absolutely nothing to do with Britain, the British establishment lost their minds. The police undertook reform. Their new priority, quote, Reports of racist behavior or action by officers and staff will be thoroughly investigated and will be dealt with swiftly and robustly with appropriate support for victims and those reporting racist behaviors. Alleged racism became the top priority, as laid out explicitly in the number one priority in the, quote, police race action plan. And whilst this is specific to behavior of police officers and staff themselves, it follows that, one, the institutional culture inevitably influences operational priorities, and two, officers who fail to treat an allegation of racism with sufficient seriousness fear or risk being accused of racism themselves. In the 2025 report that was updated, says, quote, it is not enough for us to not be racist or to claim to not be racist. Anti-racism demands that we are proactive. But crucially, it says, quote, it does not mean treating everyone the same or being colorblind racial equity. It is explicitly against racial equity. It is literally saying, do not treat the races equal. Treat white people worse. Approach white people with the assumption, pre-baked into your interpretation of the situation, come with the assumption embedded that the white people are racist and are bad, and that any claims of racism have to be treated with total seriousness and sincerity. Because you can imagine the other way around. Imagine if the police got called by a Sikh guy who said, I was just attacked by a white person, and they rock up and go, I don't believe you, mate. I think you stabbed him with your big knife. You're under arrest. They would lose their job. And the police have to take this into account. And it's what I've been saying forever, and I keep reiterating it at least once a week for the last year probably, that the police and the criminals change their behavior on the basis of policy, and they know what the policy is, and they change it. You know, we talk about how when they say, hey, we're no longer going to sentence 16 and 17 year olds as adults, the gangs recruit 16 and 17 year olds and have them commit crimes for them. In the same way, the Sikh knifeman knows, if I just say you was racist, I'm going to get away with this. Now, he didn't get away with it at the end of the day because he killed the kid, but it wasn't a bad assumption. He got pretty far with it. And remember, they've got the dad of Henry Nowak out there saying this has nothing to do with race. The police officer who arrested his dead son, who read the rights to his unconscious dead son, who pried open his eyes, shined a light in, said his pupils aren't responding because he's dead, you idiot. That woman then searched his phone and searched the father's phone to try to find racist material to continue to smear the dead son and the mourning father as racist. They still tried to save themselves by framing the father and the son as racist. And then they get the father to go up and say, oh, this has nothing to do with race. Don't make this about race. Honestly, pathetic. His son died. I literally cannot imagine what it's like going through that. But I also can't imagine your son being murdered and then you going to defend the murderers. That is less comprehensible to me than the grief itself. But of course, we know that Western countries have offices. America had one until November of last year. In November of 2025, Donald Trump closed the Office of Public Relations. Community Relations Service is what it's called here in America. The Community Relations Service. Now, I'm thinking about how to say it, because like uncharitably to describe their activity, what they do is literally show up to events in which a white person has been victimized by a black person, and they are there to pressure and blackmail and pull whatever lever necessary to keep that white person silent and to get them to go out and make a statement about how this is definitely not about race, and don't make this about race, and don't politicize this, and don't use this to, you know, determine political policy into the future. Just ignore it. This was just a random tragic accident that you can't, you know, glean any information from. Ignore it. And I was going to say that's an uncharitable way of viewing it, but that's also how they describe themselves. That's actually just what they do. So this is from CBS News back in November of 2025. They're very much against getting rid of this office. And yet when you hear the way it's described, you can tell it's what I'm describing it is exactly correct. Civil rights groups sue to stop DOJ from closing office tasked with preventing unrest in cities. Oh, they're preventing unrest in cities. How? By getting the victims of crimes to defend the criminals. A group of civil rights organizations is seeking an order to prevent the closure of a Justice Department office dedicated to preventing unrest and violence in U.S. cities. The groups are suing for a preliminary injunction to avert the closure of the Community Relations Service, which was launched in 1964 to avert rioting and racial strife in American communities. Well, they haven't done a great job, have they? Gee, they kind of suck at their job, don't they? Because when a, you know, when somebody like Austin Metcalf gets stabbed to death at a, you know, school event, having done nothing to anybody, you know, they'll go and pull his father to the side and go, look, we're, you know, this is tragic and we feel really bad for you. And the last thing that you want is your son's tragic death being used for other tragedies. You know, this could really start a feedback loop that once it gets going, it's hard to maintain. So if you can just go and give a statement of solidarity with the African-American community and not contribute to the hatred. You know, Nazis are using your son's death to progress a hateful agenda. You don't want your son's, you know, heritage, his legacy to be hatred, right? Your son was a loving guy. He was a loving person that was friends with everybody. And you need to let everybody know that, right? They come in and they pressure him and they insinuate and they cajole and they get the statement just like you heard Henry Nowak's father say, practically line by line, word for word. It's a script. It's a script they're given to try to tamp down on and push back on any political consequence to the tragedy, to the violent attack. It's not just about, oh, you know, let's stop the hordes of murderous white supremacists from using this as an excuse to attack people, because they don't exist. So that's not what it's about. No, it's about people going, oh, the illegal immigrants are stabbing our people. Let's get rid of the illegal immigrants. It's about finding any solution to the problem. They want the problem to continue. While meanwhile, George Floyd's family gets on national TV and goes, burn down the white neighborhoods, not the black neighborhoods. So is the Community Relations Service, is their job to stop rioting? Because they seem to never intervene when it's the criminal's family literally calling for rioting, literally encouraging people to riot and spreading lies that undergird and justify the rioting. They only show up when it's a white person to tell the white family, don't you dare make this about race. Even in the case of Irina Zarutska, where the guy stabs, you know, she's the only white girl in the train car. He slits her freaking throat and then walks around going, I got that white girl. And they'll show up to that family and we don't want to make this about race. There are bad actors out there that want to racialize this random attack from a mentally ill person. And we can't have innocent black people, you know, blamed for something they had nothing to do with. It's your responsibility to go out and, you know, tell these people that they're wrong and that they need to be silent. Which it's just, I don't know, man. It's like psychological torture. I don't know what type of person engages in that type of behavior, but this has been a office in America since the 1960s. European countries realized how effective this was and are using it also. So I can almost guarantee you the thing we heard Henry Nowak's father say was a script given to him by a government agent whose entire purpose is making sure that events like this do not translate into political change. And it's despicable. And again, the way the Community Relations Service describes itself, it's just like outrageous. The office has a history of intervening during periods of heightened national unrest. It was credited with helping prevent another riot in 1993 as racial tensions reemerged after the second trial of police who beat Rodney King in California. Oh, don't you love that? I mean, they've been around since 1964. Not sure what they were doing in 1992. But hey, 1993, they stopped the riots from happening again. Oh, okay. Not available in 1992. 1992, they weren't there to stop the riots from destroying the entire city, enforcing martial law and the Insurrection Act. But, you know, the second time around, they really stepped it up. Again, just shows you how ridiculous and pointless they are if they're, you know, they're pointing to, well, they didn't let it happen again. You know, the thing they let happen, it didn't happen twice. So I think that's a full success, right? Yeah, we're just going to have to stick on this topic because it just goes on and on. Henry Nowak's case is worse than you think. 60 of the 67 minutes which he spent dying in the street were in the custody of police officers. They broke basic rules of policing and PACE, P-A-C-E, denying him basic first aid and compassion because they falsely believed he was racist. I think that's exactly right. And it goes over the actual timeline. Hampshire police officers arrived at 11:37 p.m., perhaps as little as 7 minutes after the stabbing was over, to a scene framed by falsehoods. Of the 67 minutes elapsed between the attack and Nowak's death, approximately 60 of these were in the presence of police officers who broke many of the basic rules of policing and Police and Criminal Evidence Act in its codes. The police say, we're sorry. Sorry for treating stabbing victim as racist while he lay dying, say the police. Oh, whoops, whoopsie daisy. It was an accident. And it goes over all the various codes that they broke in this case. People like this, I think, express a general feeling in the UK. Classic Hex at Doomer Coomer on X says, I'm so effing angry. Even our deaths, even when they murder us, it's about effing them and their safety. I'm so effing sick of these people, this ideology, all of it needs to be purged. Restore isn't good enough if they don't plan on putting these people behind bars too. I think they do. I think Restore, I think Lowe is right there on the same page with you. And again, this is in response to the judge saying the action, you murdering a white person, has made some Sikhs feel unsafe. And that's the real tragedy. That's the real tragedy at the end of the day. I don't know what you do from here. I mean, I do know. It's violence. I'm sorry. What you do from here is you commit violence, people that are committing violence against you. I think that might be the only way. So I want to ask again, what is going to happen at the end of these protests? Let's go and roll clip four here. This is what the protest looked like earlier today. We'll show you what it descended into. Let's go and roll clip four here. Thousands of Brits march outside of Southampton Police Station in honor of Henry Nowak, demanding police be held accountable. But what happens when they aren't? Or what happens when they're given some sort of symbolic slap on the wrist punishment and nothing changes? What happens when another 600 hostile foreigners, military-aged men, arrive on dinghies today and tomorrow and the day after that? What good is expressing your outrage to a government that is well aware of it, that doesn't care, that basically is just rewriting laws to throw you in prison for expressing the things you're expressing? How is this protest going to change things? We'll get into that on the other side. Stay with us.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look, vodka, potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow, the methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me.
I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.